Now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil, and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett. Honored to have you join me again this week. I've got a special guest for you today. Her name is Cece Doucette. If you've read James Perloff's book, 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw, then you know that James interviewed her about the dangers of 5G wireless technology. And it's a fantastic chapter in his book. And I had told James that I wanted to cover that, and he said, you know what, let me get you in touch with Cece. She is a pro. And so he gave me Cece's information, and I've been in contact with her. Cece, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be joining you today.
I am super excited to have you. How did you get started exposing wireless technology?
Well, I used to help run campaigns for our public school district in Ashland, Massachusetts, and we kept hearing about this 21st century classroom and how our kids were going to need to have all this new equipment to succeed in life. So our school budgets had been cut to the bone for years, and we didn't have that kind of money to buy all this new technology. So a bunch of the parents, we jumped in and started doing fundraisers to get iPads and Chromebooks and smart TVs and wireless infrastructure. And then one night at book group, a girlfriend of mine who's an electrical engineer was reading a different book called Zapped, and she was inferring that there could be biological effects from all this wireless technology. So I kind of made a mental note of it, and then not too long after that, something else crossed my path that indicated the same thing, and I went, oh goodness, if there's anything to this, I want to know, because I've spent 8 years bringing this technology into our schools. So if you do a cursory search and say, is Wi-Fi safe, you will find that show no evidence of harm. But I'm a technical and professional writer by trade, so looking into research is sort of what I do in my skill set. And so I just dug a little bit farther, and I didn't have to go very far at all to find literally thousands of studies all over the world, peer-reviewed, published, independent scientific studies that are linking today's wireless technology to Alzheimer's, to autism, to child and adult cancers, to infertility. And we as a nation are down 50% on our sperm count right now, hovering right at the point where we can't reproduce again. So I started looking at all of this, and I went, oh my gosh, if this is what I'm finding, I need to let my schools know. So I started sending things like the French National Library took Wi-Fi out in 2008 because of the health risks. And there were at that time pockets in Belgium and pockets in Italy and pockets in Israel that were removing it from their schools. So I sent information off to my schools expecting that they would jump up and say, oh my gosh, you know, if this were a gas leak in our schools, of course we'd get the kids out of the building, we'd remove the toxin and not let them back in till it was safe. But I got back crickets. Literally, not one single person responded. And I had been working for our schools, I'd been a volunteer in the community for 20 years, and I'm a little thing, I'm not threatening in any way. So I couldn't figure out why I wasn't getting any information back. And then another dad in another town found my work, and he went and looked at our state-level reports for his district and found that our school districts will get penalized with a poor evaluation if they're not immersing this technology into the curriculum. So when parents figure out that their child's headaches, nosebleeds, nausea, dizziness, anxiety, depression, insomnia is a big one that many people face. When parents have a sick child, their doctors don't know how to diagnose this, and so it takes them a lot of out-of-pocket money to find experts, to go to specialists, until somebody finally recognizes this is an electrical sensitivity. So when parents figure out what's making their child ill, they then go to the schools and say, I would like to share information with you and ask for protections to create a safe learning environment. And then the people on the school board are looking at you like deer in the headlights. So when this dad went to the state level to see what was going on, he realized that our schools are between a rock and a hard place, because if they don't roll out all this technology that the industry has pushed in at the state level with these sweetheart deals to get a one-to-one device into the hands of our children, if our schools don't comply with that, they then get a bad evaluation, which harms their very own existence as an administrator in a school. So it's tricky. But when our public schools here in Ashland, Massachusetts, read the legal fine print that comes with our devices, I think that's where they realized they are at legal risk, because they have given the children and the staff all of this wireless technology with no safety information. And for your listeners today who use an iPhone, if you want to take it out and go into settings, I can share with you how to find that legal fine print that got our schools to take action. So once you're in settings on an iPhone, and you can find this somewhere with the Androids too, somewhere in your literature, either in the phone or the little pamphlets that came with it, there's also a disclaimer once you get to the legal section. So from an iPhone, you go into settings, and then just remember the acronym GAL, like this gal on the program today taught you this little party trick. So once you're in settings, scroll down just a little ways and hit General. That's the G. Then up at the top, hit About. That's the A. And then scroll all the way down to Legal. That's the L. So General, About, Legal. And at the bottom of Legal, we see RF exposure, which is radio frequency radiation, or two-way microwave radiation, that the industry politely calls energy. And in that legal fine print, they tell us two really important things. One, keep this device X amount of distance from your body, or you may exceed the FCC limits for public radiation exposure. And by the way, those limits were never safety tested. And two, it tells us in that legal fine print to use a hands-free option. And what they're not telling us is that one device now has five or six separate antennas in there, constantly pulsing microwave radiation to make a handshake with the nearest cell tower or the nearest router. And when we think about it, we'll say, oh yeah, I guess I did kind of know that there is a cell antenna in there, there's a data antenna, there's a Bluetooth antenna, there's a Wi-Fi antenna, there's a locator, and by now a public hotspot, because the industry is using us as their network. And what my biggest message today is that the message is not no technology. The message is safe technology. We've been on this Wi-Fi honeymoon for the last decade or so, and now it's time for the pendulum to swing back to the middle and say, we love our technology, but now we need to start really thinking hard about how much is appropriate and in what way should we be using it. So what the peer-reviewed science is also telling us is that this microwave pulsation is also hitting the addiction receptors in the brain. So for people who have been prone to alcohol, tobacco, drugs, gambling, those types of addictions, we also need to now start adding in digital addiction to the conversation.
Very, very much so. I know a lot of people that, well, you can go to any restaurant and you'll see a table of people that are busy on their devices, and instead of having a dialogue with their guests, they're too busy texting or surfing or tweeting or Facebooking, whatever.
Right, and it's leaving us feeling so disconnected. You know, and there are whistleblowers in the industry. There are people who have worked for Google who said, we willingly develop those applications to keep people going on them, to keep them hooked in. So they're coming out to say, you know, we kind of did a bad thing here. But until the public gets educated on this, they don't know any better, and they think it's cool, and they think that's what they're supposed to be doing because all their friends are doing it. But once we stop and start taking charge of our own selves again, we're like, yeah, you know what? I do feel kind of empty after I've just fallen down the rabbit hole for an hour or two of wasted time. So, you know, it's great. I'm one of 10 children, and I love every couple of weeks I pop onto Facebook, and I see what my siblings are doing and what my nieces and nephews are doing, and that brings me joy. But then I have to cut myself off before I start getting too deep into everybody else's business that, honestly, I don't have the time of day to be knowing what everybody I know is doing all day long. So we just, you know, use it for what's the good in it. And one of those solutions for people in a restaurant is one with the children. The American Academy of Pediatrics says no more than 1 to 2 hours of screen time for older children. And children under 3, 0 screen time.
That's interesting because, you know, this wireless technology is supposed to make our lives easier. That's the mantra that was spewed.
Yeah.
And houses have Wi-Fi routers everywhere.
Right, but you know what? Houses also probably still have Ethernet jacks. So
yes.
In the back of your router, there's an Ethernet jack, and in probably a number of rooms in your house, there might still be an Ethernet jack. And we already have safe technology coming into our homes through wiring, and now we've got the router box. All you have to do is plug an Ethernet cable into the back of that and run it to your devices. So I just got a little switch box, which has like 5 or 6. You can get ones that have a dozen little plugs in it for Ethernet cables. And so when we're at home, all of our technology is hardwired. So that hardwiring simply means plug it back in through an Ethernet cable. And if you have something like an iPhone or an iPad or something along those lines, you can just get a little RJ45 Ethernet to LAN adapter, and you can actually plug it back in. And if you have something like a MacBook, you can get a Thunderbolt adapter. And these devices only cost, you know, $10, $20, $30, somewhere in there. And then you just plug it into your device and then go into your device and turn off all those antennas that we spoke of. And so when I brought this stuff home to my kids, I had handed my 15-year-old daughter the adapter for her computer and for her phone. And, you know, she is a teenager, so she's kind of rolling her eyes at me. I said, come on, sweetie, just plug it in and let's see what we can do. So we hardwire her iPhone, and she goes, and we go in and we turn off the antennas, and she goes, oh, my gosh, it's so much faster. And that's one of the beauties of using hardwired technology. You get a screaming fast signal. It's far more reliable. But who would ever think to go, you know, back to old school, I guess you would say, and get an exceptionally better quality of technology when all we've been hearing is how great Wi-Fi is because it allows us to be mobile and convenient. So you trade off a little bit of the convenience, but you get really fast technology, and it's really safe. But for my teenager, what sold her on it is she said, so if I'm running my signal back through the cables and I've now turned off all those antennas, does that mean it's not eating into my data plan? And I said, that's right, because she knows if she goes over her monthly data plan, we make her pay out of pocket to teach her responsibility, right?
Right.
So she was happy because now she doesn't eat into her data plan. And at that point, she was spending 2 to 3 hours a night doing homework in high school and collaborating with friends, and they don't pick up the phone and call anymore. They just do it all through texting. And so she could now safely text with her friends using an Ethernet cable. So back to the restaurant, when you've got small children, you should never, ever give a child a device that's in active mode, and that means with those antennas on. If you do need to get something done and you want to have a pacifier to give to your child for just a little short time, make sure all those antennas are off, and then anything that's downloaded on your device, from games to books to music to movies, anything that's downloaded on your device, they are free to use without the radiation exposure. And we should all know that our clock still works in airplane mode, our alarms still work in airplane mode, our camera still works in airplane mode. And in fact, what I do have a cell phone, it's an old clunker, but I want to use as much of its useful life as I can, because another dark secret of the industry is the conflict minerals that go into building these devices. We're just stripping the Congo, and there's so many horrific humanitarian that happen in the Congo. And in order for us to have all of our wireless devices and our technology, we're doing some pretty awful things in other places. So I hope people will use their device as long as it's possibly functional, even if it means it has a cracked screen or something, because every year the industry pushes more and more new technology, and we need to really understand what it is that we're buying. So keep devices in airplane mode, and also don't ever give a child a device that's in active mode, and limit the amount of time. And so for myself, I know enough never to use an active device on my body. If I have to make a phone call, I will either put the device away from me and use speakerphone, but at home I use my landline and I have perfectly safe technology. But what I'll do if I'm on the go and I know somebody's trying to get information to me, I will turn my phone back into active mode, just turn on the antennas I need, and then allow it to upload and download for a minute, and then I'll put it back into airplane mode before I pick it up again and compose my texts or my emails. And once I'm done composing, then I will set it away from my body, and I will then go ahead and put it into active mode and send, receive, and then pop it right back into airplane mode. So I have all the technology I need, but I'm reducing my risk exponentially, and we should all have access to the right to know what this technology does so we can make our own technology safety choices.
Right. A lot of people don't realize that these devices are emitting a form of radiation.
Yeah, and so, I didn't know any of this either, and I have a girlfriend who tipped me off about this, and I went over to her house and I said, "Look, Wendy, how can I get my mind around this? This is an invisible toxin like carbon monoxide or natural gas before we put a fragrance in it so we would know if we're getting whammied by it." I said, "How can you help me understand that this is real?" And she said, "Let's get an AM radio. And if you take an AM radio and you turn it in between stations and you go near a device that's transmitting wireless radiation signals, your AM radio will pick it up." And I was like, "Really?" So we went around her house and we went to her hardwired computer and we tried it there, and it didn't pick up much of the electromagnetic field at all because there was no wireless radiation transmission. It just picked up a low level of electromagnetic field. But then when we put it next to a cell phone or an iPad, you wouldn't believe the volume of static that came out of that. And I'm like, "Okay, I get it now." And then I would walk further away and see if it would go down. But there are actually radio frequency detection meters at the consumer level that people can buy. And I went after a grant in my community, and after I educated our selectmen, one by one, I met with them, and I had applied for a grant. They denied me a couple times because this was so new to everybody. But once I figured out I really have to educate, then I sat down with them individually. And I taught them what the peer-reviewed, published, independent science says. And then I measured their own devices because I had bought myself a radio frequency meter by then. And once you see the amount of radiation coming off of these devices, and of course you want to help yourself and your family and your loved ones and your community. So once I educated them, I reapplied for my $400 grant. And they approved it for me conditionally that our library would approve it too, because I wanted to put it into circulation in our public library. And the reason I got that idea is that when the industry was rolling, when the lighting industry, the energy folks, were rolling out those CFL swirly light bulbs that turn out not to be very healthy for us either, because they have a rapid flickering off and on of light. That's how they're saving energy, is they're going on, off, on, off, on, off, on, off. And although that saves money, it's hard on our bodies because that flickering off and on, even at billions of cycles a second, is disruptive to our own biology. So, but as part of their marketing campaign, when they rolled out those light bulbs, they put a kilowatt meter on loan in every one of our libraries around here. And so I thought, if they have a kilowatt meter, maybe they'll put a radio frequency detection meter on loan. So I had to go present to our local board of trustees at the library, and there were very differing viewpoints. There was one gentleman who had his arms crossed the whole time, and he just thought this was all hogwash. And then there was another woman who was a trustee, and she just couldn't wait to get this meter into circulation so she could take it home and see what her exposures were. And then there was another woman who said, regardless of how we feel personally, as a library, we are a conduit of information for the community. So they took a vote 4-1, and they agreed to allow this radio frequency detection meter to go on loan in our public library. And it turns out we were the first in the nation to do that. But that's something anybody could do. Somebody might pony up $400 to get a meter to put on loan, or people might pool together their pennies and get one on loan. And then in our library, everybody can take it out for a week. And then while you have it out, share it with your friends and loved ones, with your colleagues, and just start getting everybody educated on this. So seeing is believing, and my local cable station was so gracious to come to my home with their videographer, and we did a 23-minute walkthrough of my home that shows what common exposures are and how to think about fixing that. So I've replaced all of the decked cordless phones with old landline phones, and you can get a good phone from Staples for $20 or $30. Because those decked cordless phone, that stands for digital electronic cordless telephone, the ones that have no wires, we all gave up our corded phones for those cordless phones, and it turns out that's like having your own little cell tower in your house. So I replaced those. I went and got my corded mouse and keyboard back. My computer was already hardwired, but we hardwired all of our laptops, our cell phones, and my printer was already hardwired. But when I put my radiation meter next to it, it was off the charts, and I'm like, well, what's up with that? It turns out there were two antennas in that printer constantly pulsing radiation, so I had to just go into settings and go off, off, and the Ethernet cable was already run from my printer to my computer, so I didn't even need those wireless antennas. So it's not rocket science, but it is a mind bender to think that we've also unwittingly adopted all of this wireless technology with no idea that it's biologically hazardous. And for anybody who has young ones, those baby monitors, you especially don't want to have anywhere near a baby, because we know from our research on lead and other toxins that we need to protect the fetus and that child's brain, especially in the first 2 years of development once they're born. And the fetus is the most vulnerable because their cells are dividing and multiplying, and we now know scientifically that this can cause DNA damage. So our own government, which stopped funding a lot of research on the non-thermal, low-level, non-ionizing microwave radiation, which is what runs all of our wireless, when the industry got the Telecom Act passed in 1996, most of our programs got defunded that were already identifying their serious harm with wireless technology, but it all got defunded. And then there was one study that got commissioned about 20 years ago, and it wound up being the U.S. National Toxicology Program's largest study ever. It's a $30 million study that they started two decades ago, anticipating that they would go in and prove that wireless is safe. And at the time, cell phones were the wireless technology of the day, so that's what signals were being used. So last November 1st, they put out their $30 million study report after they did an unprecedented three-day peer review at the National Institutes of Health. And they had world-leading scientists weigh in on this. And at the end of that review, they concluded that this radio frequency radiation produces clear evidence, and that's the highest public warning that our government, which is one of the highest authorities in the world, can give: clear evidence of tumors, which is cancer, and DNA damage, which is the roadmap to grow a proper human. So right on the heels of that. And, you know, the industry will spin it and say, oh, well, that's just one study. You need more studies to corroborate. Right on the heels of the U.S. National Toxicology Study came the Ramazzini Institute study, and that's an independent cancer research group in Italy. And this other large study also found the same findings that our own government study found. So we don't need more science. What we need now is two things. We need to have public policy catch up to the science, And we need to educate the public in the meantime. So we've got some great resources for that happening right now. Here in Massachusetts, we lead the nation with 19 bills that address this man-made radiation and public health and the environmental impact, because it's not only hurting us, but it's harming all of our pollinators, all of our plant life, and for the bees and the other pollinators, they have their own electromagnetic navigation system that links into the Earth's electromagnetic field. And with this whole layer of electrosmog, it's disrupting their navigation systems, which is helping to explain why the bees and the other pollinators are not finding their way back to the hives. Because this man-made radiation, this constant pulse of microwave radiation, is dysregulating their navigation system. So Massachusetts has 19 bills, and we're so grateful for that, but we don't move very fast in Massachusetts. But I have had the privilege of collaborating with a state rep in New Hampshire, Representative Patrick Abrami, and when his constituent invited him into her home when he was campaigning for the vote, she had gotten very ill, and none of her doctors could figure out, and, you know, as that journey goes, they don't know what tests to run because they don't know about microwave sicknesses. And so you wind up seeing all sorts of specialists, paying all this money out of pocket, till finally you figure out that all you have to do is hardwire your house, hardwire your office, turn off the wireless, and protect yourself. And for many people, they start to recover. For some, it's gotten so bad that there may be no path of return. So she educated Representative Patrick Abrami, and he listened. And he's an engineer by training, and he got very curious. So he systematically went in and did the review as an engineer would do. And he had this major wow moment, like, wow, what have we done? So they had hosted a screening of this amazing film called Generation Zapped, which won Best Documentary at the D.C. Independent Film Festival. It won Best Documentary at the Women's Independent Film Festival. And it was an official selection for the United Nations Film Festival. So this woman asked me to co-host a screening at her public library up in Stratham, New Hampshire. And so she put me in touch with this representative, and they jumped in his car from New Hampshire and drove down to my kitchen table here in Massachusetts, and we spent the afternoon helping him to connect the dots on this. And then Rep. Abrami wrote this incredible bill that has very poignant questions, asking things like, why isn't the FCC protecting us? Why have other countries got public radiation exposure limits that are 100 times better than what we have here in the U.S. So it's an excellent bill, and they asked me to come up and testify on the bill along with others in the state who have already figured this out. And then we brought in the retired president of Microsoft Canada, who's a whistleblower on this issue. Frank Clegg came down. He flew in from Canada and testified with us. And then Dr. Paul Elroux out of McGill University is not only a scientist, and he's done the laboratory experiments that show how cancer-causing this is, but he's also a medical school professor at McGill University. And he came down and gave us the science. Clegg gave us the industry perspective, is to be first to market, and they are not taking into consideration the non-industry funded peer-reviewed science. But Mr. Clegg tells us that given a nudge, the industry can absolutely do better. So we need to hold the accountable industry through our purchases and through conversations with the people selling us the equipment, saying, look, you got to pressure the industry to do better. With our legislators, we need to pressure the industry to do better. And we can, and that just means running hardwired fiber optics or high-speed cable or copper to the premises, and then we pick up with it with Ethernet cables on the other side of the wall. So it's not rocket science.
Okay, that's going to take care of the first half. My guest today is Cece Doucette, and we're talking about wireless technology, 5G. We're going to cover the gamut. Stay with us, won't you? We'll be right back. Thirteen pieces of the jigsaw is a fantastic book written by James Perloff. It's 292 pages, and in this book is a chapter on 5G and wireless technology. And I urge you to get a copy of this book if you don't have it already. It is an outstanding researched material for you to have at your fingertips. You can get your copy of 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw by phoning us toll-free in Canada and the United States at 1-800-234-9673. You can also phone us on our regular line, which is 512-263-9780. You can order a copy of this book on our website and our secure shopping cart at powerofprophecy.com. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. If you want to send in a check or money order, please make the check or money order payable to Power of Prophecy. And yes, you can even send cash. You can mail it to us here at Power of Prophecy. The address is 4819 R.O. Drive, Suite 102 in Spicewood, Texas, and our zip code is 78669. And now let's return to our regular program. My guest today is Cece Doucette.
I was so impressed with the New Hampshire legislature. I've had a bill here in Massachusetts for 5 years now, and some of these other bills we've had for multiple sessions. But New Hampshire got in there, and we're at a new point in time with the science. It's very clear. And we have industry whistleblowers. So we were able to educate first their, I think it was their House Committee on Science, Technology, and Energy. They passed it, and then it went to the Senate Committee on Health and Human Services, which is led by physician Dr. Tom Sherman. And he was able to educate his committee on this, and we went in and testified for him as well. And then they passed it. And then it went to Governor Sununu in New Hampshire, and he passed it into law. They have now formed a commission that's begun to meet to address the biological and environmental impact of wireless radiation, and especially 5G technology, because the G in that terminology just means generation. So right now, our cell phones, by and large, run off of third and fourth generation technology, or 3G and 4G, as you'll see on the little bars on your cell phone. And they're phasing out 1G and 2G, which brought, you know, cell phones to market, and then cell phones with texting. And then up in third generation, we got access to the internet. And then fourth generation, we wound up basically with the whole computer in our hands. So third and fourth generation technology and the earlier ones use much longer wavelengths. And what's left of the electromagnetic spectrum, and so that segment that uses those longer wavelengths is pretty much built out. They've pretty much sold off all the spectrum for that, and they've put on as many devices as it can handle, and so there's really no new revenue to be made off of that. So what's left of the spectrum are these crummy little millimeter waves, and so the industry is spinning it that these millimeter waves will bring us much faster download speeds. It will allow us to have smart cities and self-driving autonomous cars and what sounds like a really cool future. But what they're not telling us is that these little millimeter waves will still have to use the bigger waves, because the millimeter waves can't get through buildings or trees or anything else very easily. So they need that boost from the bigger waves. And in order to have all this new data, they will have to put cell towers like every 2 to 12 houses inside our neighborhoods, not 300 feet up in the air on an industrial pole somewhere, but literally inside our neighborhoods, outside our bedrooms, every 2 to 12 houses, so we can wake up tomorrow with a cell tower in front of our house or in back of our house or next to our house. And if we don't have poles in our neighborhood, up at the federal level, they're trying to change in some laws that would allow them to pursue our neighbors to say, hey, we'll make you a sweetheart of a deal if you will allow us to put a cell tower on your roof. So now they're going to start asking our neighbors, if they have their way, to put a small cell antenna right on top of our homes that will then blast signal all the way through our neighborhoods. And it's just unconscionable what they're doing. But we have hope. There is a town in Burlington, Massachusetts that had more questions than Verizon could answer when they approached the town with seven small cell antennas. And so then the vendor said, but wait, it could be 14 antennas or it could be 30 antennas, thinking that the town would be so excited to have all this free revenue come from the leasing of public utility access ways to put all these poles in. But the town of Burlington, Massachusetts had more questions than the Verizon folks could answer. So they formed a townwide small cell committee, and they came up with a small cell policy that said, if you want to put these antennas into our town, you can't just drop and run like has happened with other equipment. We will require that you come back every year and recertify that this equipment is still viable in our community, and we in our budget don't have the resources, nor do we have the expertise on staff to oversee such a recertification, so the vendors will have to pay us a fee so we can enact that process every year. And the night that they ratified that small cell policy in Burlington, Massachusetts, the Verizon lawyer was there, and he said, we do not wish to set a precedent for an annual recert, nor do we wish to set a precedent for a fee. And so the Verizon lawyer said, my client would like to withdraw those seven small cell antennas. So for every town out there who thinks their hands are tied and that they only have to do what the industry is telling them they have to do, they need to come back and see what others are doing, because there are other examples where towns are refusing to allow these small cells in. And in the towns that didn't know better, like Sacramento, California, for example, I just watched a heartbreaking video online out on YouTube somewhere of a meeting with the mayor in Sacramento as well as council members, where families were coming up to the podium and saying, our two daughters got so sick, and we had to rule out that it was like a virus or a cold or something, because it kept going and getting worse. It didn't resolve after a week or two, as most things do. And their doctors couldn't figure out what was going on, and they're like, well, what changed a month ago when the girls started getting so sick? And they're like, what is that pole outside their bedroom window? And they started investigating. And they realized that the industry had come in with a small cell antenna that they put right outside their daughter's bedroom, and their girls got severely sick.
Wow.
So they moved the girls out of that bedroom immediately and put them as far away in the house as they could sleep them. And then they realized there were some shielding materials to try and block it from coming in. But this radiation is like a pebble in a pond. It just radiates out forever. So you can do some shielding and hope to get some gains there, but we have to come up to speed on this and stop allowing this toxic technology into our homes and into our neighborhoods now. So there is an organization called Grassroots Environmental Education, and it's run by Patty Wood, who has received accolades and awards from the Environmental Protection Agency. And I first learned of their work through a project they had done called the Baby Safe Project. There's a beautiful 3-minute video with Dr. Hugh Taylor, who runs the OBGYN program at Yale, and he's also done some of the scientific studies with mice. And he found that when you expose the pregnant mice to cell phone radiation and radio frequency radiation, the pups come out looking like they have ADD, ADHD. They're just bouncing off the walls of the cage. And so he is recommending through this Baby Safe project that parents get up to speed quickly, because you do not want to have wireless around the fetus, nor do you want to have it around your children. So that's where I first learned of the good work of the grassroots environmental people, Patty and her husband Doug. And they have now taken on the 5G issue at the national level, and they've put up two additional websites for two new projects. One of them is called 5G Crisis, and they've built a wonderful toolkit that would allow anybody to quickly come up to speed on this issue. And there's a 2-page fact sheet that we can share with our loved ones, with our neighbors, with our towns. And that fact sheet is from another really good nonprofit called the Environmental Health Trust. And they've got databases of what countries all over the world are doing to protect people. They've got databases on the corruption in our government. They've got databases on the science. So the Environmental Health Trust is another really good group. But their 2-page 5G fact sheet is on this website for 5G Crisis. And then they also encourage people to do a local screening of this film called Generation Zapped. And please don't pirate. You know, we don't want our listeners to pirate that film somewhere. It sometimes pops up on YouTube thinking people can get it for free. But that filmmaker spent 4 years of her life creating this incredible film, so we need to help pay Sabine El-Jamal back, and we do that through paying to download the film or paying to invest in a licensing royalty if we're going to show it in the community. So please do write by anybody who's spent their time to bring us this important information. So in our communities, there are flyers available that you can go door-to-door and give to your neighbors to get a meeting together and then do a screening of Generation Zapped, which is these incredible world-leading scientists and doctors and people who have become ill from the wireless, all speaking in a way that's not threatening or fear-mongering. It's just a beautifully done film that teaches us what we need to know and shows us what safe technology looks like. So educate everybody around you. Don't try and do this alone, because you'll very quickly be swept under the rug, because most people have only heard how great it is. But we're at such a good place today with these amazing tools to educate ourselves and our loved ones and our towns especially, because otherwise we can wake up tomorrow with a 5G small cell antenna. And we should all be asking our towns, have you been given applications for these small cell antennas? And if you have, you need to start moving quickly.
You mentioned in your interview with James, you mentioned home rule rights.
Mm-hmm.
What are home rule rights, and why is there a push to remove them?
So at the federal level and at the state level, the industry is trying to take away home rule rights. And those are rights that our towns have. Our local municipal government boards have the right to say if or where we want any of this technology. And what the industry is trying to do is strip our towns of that right. And they did that initially with the cell towers back in the 90s. They wrote something called the Telecom Act, and they put in this Section 704. And in Section 704, they wrote in a little clause that said, if anybody has environmental concerns, then you're just out of luck because this infrastructure is coming in. And so that's how the cell towers first came in our town. And initially, they were out in industrial areas, away from our homes, away from our schools, away from our hospitals, away from our senior centers. And then over the years, they've started encroaching. So we've got these big cell towers closer and closer. Like in my town, inside a very densely populated neighborhood, there's a water tower. And you drive by and you look at the top of it now, and the whole circumference is covered with these cell antennas, these big macro cell antennas for 3G and 4G and 2G and whatever else is up there. And the science will tell us that you should not have a cell tower emitting this toxic radiation for at least a half a mile where anybody is, or at least a quarter mile. And if you have a vulnerable population like children, fetuses, the elderly, and anybody with a pre-existing health condition, you should have at least a half a mile distance. But the industry wrote their own law with the Telecom Act. So now they've been encroaching closer and closer to our homes. They've been putting them on top of schools. We now have cancer clusters breaking out in schools that have cell towers on the property or on the rooftops or out in the playing fields, because it's now been long enough for cancers to develop on these young, developing bodies where their DNA is still forming, and we know this damages DNA. So that's what it means to take away home rule. That's what it means to take away the rights from our towns to say if or where we want this technology. And now they're trying to do that with the small cells. So they put in a shot clock rule at the federal level that says if somebody comes to your town and applies for a small cell permit, you have X number of days, I think it's like 60 or 90 days, to say yes. And if you don't, then we're just going to do it anyway.
Wow.
And if you say no, and if you claim it's because of health reasons, we're going to sue you. So that leaves our towns looking like deer in the headlights, because
right,
they think they have no choice. But they really do, and what they need to do is start tuning in. There are towns out in California near Silicon Valley which have banned 5G. The city of Brussels in Belgium has put a moratorium on 5G. There are towns in Switzerland that have put a moratorium on 5G, and the industry in Geneva tried to railroad it in, and they just had 50,000 informed citizens show up to protest against this toxic wireless infrastructure. So I think the wheels are coming off the bus for the industry because people are starting to figure this out. And one of the projects that I am so most honored to be affiliated with is a nonprofit that we've built out of Europe. It's called Wireless Education. And one of the gentlemen and his wife, Brett and Lynn West, who were in the UK, Brett is a technologist, and he grew up in South Africa, and as a young man, he had been an emergency medical technician, an EMT, and so he had a medical background, and then he grew up and moved to England, where he became a technologist, and his job was to put in Wi-Fi systems into these huge construction projects in the UK. And then one day, it crossed his desk that the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, that's the group of doctors that get the conundrum cases that our regularly trained doctors can't figure out what's going on with people. So they're taking care of the environmental impacts that are harming people. So they know about wireless radiation. And the American Academy of Environmental Medicine in 2013 put a position statement out to school superintendents saying we should not have wireless in our schools. We should choose to continue to hardwire our schools and never expose children to wireless radiation. So when Brett read that, he was like, well, what is this? You know, he's a dad. They have, you know, young children. And he did the deep dive. He's a brilliant man, and he's very much self-taught. And he went in and looked at the non-industry-funded science and said, oh, my gosh, well, I can help people. So Brett, being a technologist, said, well, I'll just do a spin-off company where I can go in and help people remediate and figure out how to have safe technology. But he quickly realized that you can't fix it for people because they don't even know the issue exists. So first, we have to educate. And that's when he and his wife, who's a graphic designer, started building this nonprofit, and then we built a project under it called Wireless Education. And with that, we have been collaborating with the Environmental Health Trust, who referred us to this Dr. Mikko Ahonen, who's one of the world's leading scientists out of Europe. And so Dr. Ahonen and I, with the successes that I've had helping to educate my schools and a bill that I've got in our legislature, and because I'm a tech writer, I said, you know, if there's anything I can do to help, let me know. So I loaned my tech writing skill set. Mikko Ahonen lent his scientific expertise. Brett lent his technology finesse. And Lynn donated her skill set with building us a website and stuff. So we hit it hard for about 3 months, and we built this schools and families course, and we built a corporate safety induction awareness course. So literally, we have the training built in a half an hour. Anybody can go out online and take either the schools and families course, which will teach you all about the biological risks, and then the corporate course that teaches not only the biological risks, but also the legal risks, because as we talked about for our own devices, the fine print says we're covering our backs and now you own the legal liability because we told you right there in the fine print not to put this on your body.
There are a lot of people that don't bother to read this fine print in there.
Oh, heck no, and it's buried five levels in your phone. Who would ever even go right there?
Now, you keep mentioning the peer review, independent studies. A lot of people don't realize that they think the FCC is setting regulations on this electromagnetic radiation.
No, they don't have any expertise on the biological impact. All they did is relied on engineers, and this is not a dig on our engineers. We love the products that they can design, but we've got to hold them accountable for designing them safely.
Right.
So what'll happen is if you try and talk to some engineers and some physicists, they will say, well, it all is within FCC guidelines. But that's meaningless because the FCC guidelines were never safety tested for biological harm.
They're non-enforceable guidelines, aren't they?
No, because those guidelines only talk about thermal effects. They took this dummy head and they filled it up with gel, water-based gel, and they stuck a probe in it and said, how much heat from one device does it take in a half an hour to raise the temperature of the gel inside this mannequin's head? So what they did is they came up with this thermal effect based on heat that has nothing to do with what's inside of a human head, which is our brain, and all the electrical circuitry that goes on inside of a brain. All they did was measure for heat and said, okay, this is how much radiation exposure we'll allow for the public. Well, that is hundreds of thousands of times higher than where the independent research is showing cancers, DNA damage, autism, Alzheimer's, headaches, nosebleeds, nausea, dizziness, behavior issues, anxiety, depression, because we now know scientifically at least four mechanisms of harm. And for years, the industry spun it that there's no mechanism of harm identified. Well, they can't use that argument anymore because, one, we know that this disrupts our circadian rhythm. In the wee hours of darkness, the pineal gland in the brain is meant to release melatonin. And melatonin, in the wee hours of darkness, goes into our system and regulates our sleep cycle, but it also helps to escort the toxins of the day. So even just regular cell repair and regeneration, never mind the debris that we're causing with microwave radiation hitting our cells. But melatonin escorts those toxins out of the body. So now we are disabling or disrupting our own physiological mechanism for regulating our sleep cycle and regulating the cleanup of our bodies. And then you begin to have that accumulating in our bodies, and we get a domino effect. So that melatonin is a big deal because now that we've got this microwave radiation pulsing at us 24 from all of our devices, from the cell towers, from our routers, from our baby monitors, from our gaming devices, our bodies don't get a break to catch up. So the melatonin is a big deal. The second thing is that this is an electromagnetic field that is magnetizing our blood cells, and instead of having individual cells free-floating throughout our body, it's causing them to stack up, to magnetize like a roll of coins. And that's what Dr. Magda Havas up at Trent University in Canada is calling the Rouleau effect. And that Rouleau effect causes our blood cells, I think it's the red blood cells, to glom together, and now they're not free-floating, and these glommed-up cells can't go to where they need to go to oxygenate our whole system. So that's why some people feel headaches, or they get nosebleeds, or they get nausea. We know systematically that this Rouleau effect is having an impact, too. So that's the second thing. The third thing is that we are seeing that this constant pulse of microwave radiation is hitting the cell wall and causing a disruption at the voltage-gated channels. And the calcium channels are a really important one. So this radiation hits the cell wall, and it causes a leakage. So now we have stuff leaking out of the cells that creates a chemical reaction. That chemical reaction produces a really nasty free radical called peroxynitrite. And that's about as scientific as I'll go because I'm not a scientist. But that peroxynitrite then goes in and attacks your weakest system. Maybe it's your brain. Maybe it's your testes. Maybe it's my breast. Maybe it's my central nervous system. Maybe it's my immune system. But that peroxynitrite is a really nasty free radical. And now, because we're messing with the melatonin, we're not escorting those things out of our body. And then fourth, we know that in a controlled medical environment, we can use this microwave radiation for some really good stuff. We can use it to stimulate stem cell growth. We can use it to stimulate bone cell growth and do some amazing things in science and medicine. But with this ubiquitous way that we've brought this to market, it's totally uncontrolled. And now we see that this constant exposure to this microwave pulse is causing cells to grow that we don't want to grow. We don't want to stimulate cancer cells. We don't want to stimulate other mutated cells in our system. So we know that this is disrupting our circadian rhythm with the melatonin dysregulation. We know that it's causing peroxynitrite. We know that it's causing this Rouleau effect, and we know that it's stimulating harmful cell growth. So we don't need to do more science before we take action. We should have invoked the precautionary principle decades ago when the first oncologist got on Larry King Live and said, I think my patient died of this unusual brain tumor on the side of her head that happens to line up with the antennas in her cell phone. When that went on Larry King Live, that became a nightmare for the industry overnight. Right. They stepped up and said, well, we have the resources. Let us do the research on this. And they did. They put this Dr. George Carlo in place. He's hired like 200 scientists. And for years, they did the science. And when Dr. Carlo reported back to the industry head at the time, it was Tom Wheeler who headed up the Cellular Telephone Industry Association, or the CTIA. Dr. Carlo reported back that it probably did kill that woman, and children are especially vulnerable to this type of man-made radiation. And instead of invoking the precautionary principle, they promoted that telecom act, which forbade anybody to speak up about any harm from this wireless infrastructure. So the industry has known for decades. And when I was first figuring this out and trying to piece it all together in my own head, because I hadn't met anybody yet. I didn't know anybody I could talk to on this. So I kept thinking, surely if this is as bad as my research is indicating, somebody must have our backs on this, right? And it wasn't until 2015 that that missing piece to my puzzle came full circle. And that's when Harvard University's Law School Center for Ethics, the JAFRA Center for Ethics, published a 59-page investigative report where this journalist, Norm Alster, had investigated. He did the deep dive as to why are we where we are today. And he said in that, you know, back then the industry knew, they did this study, they knew it caused cancer, they knew children were more vulnerable. And that head of the CTIA had formerly been the head of the cable industry, he had been the head of the wireless industry, and then he got to become the head of the FCC. And so that's why that report is called Captured Agency, how the FCC is dominated by the industry it presumably regulates. And now, so that's what we have. And now today, when President Trump was elected, Tom Wheeler stepped down and Ajit Pai was given that post. And Ajit Pai is a former senior lawyer for Verizon. So we're back in the same boat as we were before, and now the industry and the FCC are forcing this toxic 5G small cell infrastructure into our neighborhoods unless we figure it out quickly and start speaking up, and a lot of people have. So that's why I encourage people to go out and look at the 5G Crisis website and the Americans for Responsible Technology website, because you can sign up there and they will give you the information that you need. They send out a little notice. They used to do like a Technology Tuesday and give you an action item. If there's a good U.S. senator or a U.S. congressperson who's doing something on our behalf, call their offices, thank them, support them. If there's somebody who's doing something that's not safe for us, they'll give you the information to use your voice. A 5-minute call, a 10-minute email, we can make a difference, but our democracy has never worked for positive change until we get educated and say, no, we're not going to do this to ourselves and our children and the future generations because it's damaging our fertility program in our own body. So it's a lot. It's a lot. I tell people to freak out for 10 minutes as you start looking around you and seeing where you've brought all this wireless into your own life and then noticing where it is all over our communities and our workplaces. But now that we know, we're at a great point to do something about it. Between the laws that we have in New Hampshire, and then Oregon just passed an emergency law to get their Department of Public Health to look at the independent science and then make recommendations for the population and the schools. So we don't have to start from zero now. We have so many good tools right at our disposal. But we've all got to find the pluck and the courage to say, I don't know this, I don't know anything about it, but I've heard enough to know that the fine print in my phone has already given me a warning, and that can't be good.
Well, Cece, we're out of time, and I greatly appreciate you spending an hour with me and our listeners today on Power Prophecy.
Well, you're very welcome, and thank you for the opportunity. And folks are more than welcome to just go out to my own research repository, which is called Understanding EMFs for Electromagnetic Fields. If you just put in Cece Doucette, Understanding EMFs, anybody can go pound around in my personal research repository. That's where I store things and categorize them so I can get back to them to share with others. Feel free to use that as a launch point, and good luck, and I hope people will find the courage to start talking this up, because if we don't, we're all going to have a small cell right outside our home.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Cece. Have a great day. God bless you.
All right. Thanks so much, Jerry. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was my guest, Cece Doucette. Thank you for tuning in this week to Power of Prophecy, and I pray that you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.